Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had
Well, welcome to Second Jacks. Now, come on, he's Mr. Brendan Cornan on his new day on Tuesday. Mr. Matt Webb, Rescue Futures up 17. We're going to try and run a rally up again today. We rallied yesterday, but we finished well off the high. We'll see if that happens again today. Maybe not. Dow Futures up 207. NASDAQ Futures up 60. Let's see. We smacked the Fed back in line. We've got people talking in China, so we're going to solve this thing totally in like a week or so, Brendan, or declare victory or something. We're going back to the last 9 years. Fed pouring money in. Stocks go up every day. Everybody happy. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to last for a long time.
It might. You know, a lot of people, it's all they've ever known.
Well, I know, but I think there's just too much volatility right now, and I think a lot of it's going to be driven by policies of the administration, and there's a whiplash effect that...
Well, when you say volatility, it doesn't... You can have more stock movement. It doesn't necessarily affect the value.
True. No, I understand that. But if you're... if you're in an environment where everything is measured on daily progression, that the stock market has to go up every day, every time there's a downturn, there is going to be a reaction. And sometimes the reaction causes the downturn in the market. And I think sometimes that's driven by political policy.
I would say you're absolutely correct, more so lately than historically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Fed actions have always caused the market to move. I mean, cause
well, that's true. But I think also that there's this is unusual in the amount of policy decisions that's generated from the White House directly attacking the Fed in many cases, but also in things like the policy with China. What is the policy of China? What is the policy in the Middle East for the military? And it's a whiplash effect that we don't know where that policy is. It's not as though there's a determinable approach by the administration as to what they want to have done.
You're saying there is no policy.
That's right. There's no discernible policy. You know, the word I've heard a lot is transactional, that everything that is decided is on what is good for this transaction, whether the transaction be couched in terms of pulling out of Syria or pulling out of Afghanistan or a trade war with China or tariffs or, you know, whatever the policy happens to be. It's immediate and short-term without logically thinking through the implications of that on other elements in the world.
I would agree with that. Matter of fact, I totally agree with it. The question is, if you have something, I was listening to, is it Jim, not Thorpe, the hell's the guy's name, comes on TV and he's got the bow tie going. And he's like TV's sort of Carl Denninger. He talks about debt loads and things like that. And everybody immediately at the end of the thing, they say, well, how come nothing's happened? You've been talking like that for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why isn't there some kind of a crisis? And why are markets, why don't they just keep going up? Because it looks like they're going to keep going up. And they have for a while. And every time they go down, a million people come on and tell you, just send me more money. Don't ever take a check out of here. Keep your money in the market. Only idiots get out. And it seems like, you know, that's the mantra. Mm-hmm. And these crises seem to keep building but keep passing. I mean, yesterday we were trying to contrast some of the stuff, and there was the there's nothing wrong with being older, Brendan. I don't think, but God, you got to start you got to at least look at today's world. But speaking of which, Manny and I have to talk about something from last night. Talk about encroachment. This is a new low in the annals of bars. Actually, it was fun, but new low. Anyway, I'll stick with my story. But I mean, I'm listening to Wilbur Ross, and I'm watching, and I'm reading the headlines here about how we've got China, you know, basically getting screwed over there. You know, it's been going down to whatever. Then at the same time, I'm reading about the dollar-denominated debt that they're having trouble now taking care of, and with their currency down. I mean, you see this happen every time something happens, policy-wise. Whether, you know, whether there's a war, some people's kids get killed. You know, it used to be even the rich people, they never went the same amount percentage-wise as the poor people, but they pretty much went in World War II and those other places.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they, more of them didn't get out of it than the history writes, but fact is, it was pretty much a countrywide effort.
Mm-hmm.
And now you see these pockets of, the Fed, and last week I actually did some research, not for the first time, I do it a lot, but where for the 8 years that the Fed dropped the interest rates to zero, their friends, the slimy bankers, actually raised the average credit card rates during that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
When they're essentially their effective money was zero.
Yeah.
And, when you see this, we're gonna balance the world on farmers now. So we've got hundreds and hundreds of farmers selling their place, with the big guys gleefully taking the place over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's this amazing amount of collateral damage that all these policies seem to have, and kind of for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, since some people always seem to benefit by somebody else's, you know, bad times, and those people now seem to control the place, it's sort of a problem, and it's a real social problem, it's a political problem, I don't know how you stop it. I mean, I listened this weekend to an awful lot of people, both sides of the aisle. Young people just got elected. They seem positive. They seem bright. They seem energetic. They seem like, you know, you almost wish they were your kids, for God's sake. You know? And then I hear on the way home last night, somebody being interviewed on News Radio 78 that, well, you know, the Republican Congress did nothing but make miserable Obama's presidency pretty much on purpose. They said they're going to do that day one.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy couldn't put a new can in the White House without them voting no. And now the Democrats are back in, and the ones that are there, that are in charge, remember that totally, and they want to do the same thing to this guy,
mm-hmm.
who may in fact deserve it. But still, that's not what you want in government, which is totally the opposite of what these young people on the TV were saying. That's not what people voted for.
Mm-hmm.
They vote for people to go there and do some work. And in fact, this one guy, let's talk about it. A bad thing in life. Real bright guy. He looks just like Putin. Just, you know, like a young
Putin. Oops, that's unfortunate.
Like, oops, yeah. And, but, you know, what can you do about that?
It would be even worse if he gets a position in the White House.
but I mean, seemed like all four of these people were terrific. You couldn't tell how bright the black lady was, even though she'd served like two terms in Afghanistan because she had the chief cold of 2 weeks ago where she couldn't talk.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, I think it was a pretty good group. And the guy who looked like Putin said something very strange. He goes, the guy says, well, the ladies interviewed him, and she says, how did you guys run your campaign? He goes, that's very simple. We ran on the same campaign Donald Trump did.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, well, what are you talking about? He says, Trump ran on a campaign that the people in Washington do not represent you.
Mm-hmm.
They're a bunch of losers. All they care about is themselves. And there's nothing but gridlock, and we just said the same thing. Because guess what? It's still a problem. And if people keep voting for these changes, obviously you can vote for a new young, doesn't have to be young, but a new rep in your area. Maybe he's never been in government, he or she. And you get some bright eyes and ears in there at any age. A guy could be 80 or a lady and still have bright eyes and ears.
Mm-hmm.
And now you get them there, and guess what? I was asking yesterday Frank, I think you probably know better than Frank in this area, what does the guy whose ass is at the end of the 435 long bench at Congress, what can he accomplish, he or she?
Mm-hmm. They can't accomplish very much in their first couple of terms. They don't have the seniority to get things introduced into their committees. They don't have standing on some of the big committees like appropriations or ways and means or even some of the defense or the banking committees. They don't have enough seniority to do that. They can make a lot of noise to their constituents about what they're trying to do and what they're intending to do. They can write bills and try to have them introduced, but whether they do or not, very little will be done until they get some seniority.
Well, what can a group, say the four people that were there yesterday, Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter, yesterday, Sunday, what if there's 20 people like that? Maybe even on both sides of the aisle, I shudder when I say that. What if 20 of them go out and go to some, play some night and have a couple of beers and say, look, let's at least talk together on a lot of these issues so people have to deal with 20 votes instead of none or one.
Well, now you're talking about a different scenario, and that the example that you're talking about is what happened with the Republicans and, that the fringe wing, well, according to some folks, the fringe wing, the Mark Meadows and his group of the radical right Republicans in the House, they've got a small group, relatively small speaking, I think it's like 30 or 35 members of the House who are dictating the policy because they have enough votes that they could block things from the Republican. I mean, this goes back to what's called the Hastert rule, that when Denny Hastert was in charge of the House, he would not bring to a vote any bill that by itself would not pass with Republican votes alone. Okay. So if there was any legislation and it would pass, it needed 50% to pass, and he had 55%, but 6% of those votes were Democrats and 49% of the necessary votes were Republicans, he would not call it for a vote. He required that the Republican caucus and Republican members of the House had to be enough votes to pass the legislation before he would call it for a vote. As a result, the wing of the Republican in the House, the Mark Meadows group, the Jim Jordan group, have enough members that they could block that from happening. If their coalition, if their block of votes stayed together, there could not be a Republican majority to affect any legislation. As a result, things are stalled. And this small group, I mean, we've talked about it before here, the tyranny of the minority, not the tyranny of the majority that was part of the basis for our sense of government, is being affected right now because minority blocs can control and do a lot more damage than the majority.
Well, I mean, it depends on which end you're sort of at. I mean, one of the reasons why they, when I was on the board of the CBO, let's just say I was, how can you be, I think I was always very personally popular. Well, who the hell knows, but I think I was fairly personally
popular. How could you not?
Oh, God. Well, you never know. But I mean, I liked everybody, so it wasn't like I never allowed to bomb on anybody or anything like that. So, but on a board level, I think I was very hated.
Mm-hmm.
Because if people would lob one out there at one Monday meeting, and I didn't want it to go there, I would find my way into having a cup of coffee, a lunch, or a beer with three other board members by the next Monday, and I'd say, "Look, this is where these guys are going with this one. I don't like it. Let's not let them blow it by me. Here's my reasons." And once in a while, somebody'd say, "No, I agree with them," but most of the time, when they heard what I had to say, they'd say they can't really be trying to blow that one by us. And I'd show up with three or four votes,
mm-hmm.
and all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, and to say that the group this didn't happen every week or anything, but once in a while, and then to say that the group was not happy is an understatement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and yet you do get stuff blown by you if you don't sit down and say, "Well, what does this mean to you?"
Yeah,
I mean, in fact, stuff can really get blown by you, and mm-hmm. I think you could easily go from go there their first year, go to your schlack committee assignment, depending on which one it is. I mean, what I was trying to say yesterday, and maybe you can elaborate. You could be on the agricultural committee, but now earlier a couple of months ago, they passed the agricultural bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the last year had to be a very exciting time on that committee,
mm-hmm.
because it's a 5-year bill. I mean, it impacts. Bleep load of people,
mm-hmm.
and I got to believe your phone's ringing. Everybody's phone's ringing. There's people in there. I mean, it's probably almost chaos getting that bill done. But now, what if you're a freshman congressman, and they put Susie will go on the agricultural bill, and you're 5 years away from a bill? Do you even meet?
I think you should meet, and you have to meet. I mean, not by rule, but I think that you have to meet to, and, you know, people who are on that committee are going to want to meet to show their constituents that they're doing something. But yes, they will meet.
Well, I mean, obviously you're not going to really do anything for, well, it's been, the reason why it's a 5-year bill is it takes a long time, but I got to believe it's about as stand down as it can be a month after.
I understand your point, and what's the likelihood that anything will need to be done or could be done, because you don't know the effect of the bill for 3 years. So why would you meet the first 3 years until you see how the bill is going to be effective?
So I mean, how do you even get your voice out there on anything? That's mm-hmm. where it lands.
Well, that kind of goes back to the point that I made earlier, that these young congresspeople, men and women, don't have the seniority to effectively legislate for their first term. I mean, you look at somebody like, well, in Illinois, take the case of Lauren Underwood or Sean Kasten or Chuy Garcia, the three new Illinois representatives. You know, Garcia is stepping into the spot of Luis Gutierrez, so he'll probably get some good committee appointments because he's Latino. And he's taking over for Gutierrez, who had some clout in Congress after having been there for 25, 26 years.
Plus, he probably could retain some percentage of that staff that knows where the can is.
That's right. In the case of Underwood or Sean Kasten, I don't think they're going to be very effective in their first term for a variety of reasons. They don't have the staff that preceded them, like Chuy Garcia does. They're moving into representing people who didn't vote them in past years because they both took over Republican districts. So anybody who was left from the Holcomb administration or Peter Roskam's administration isn't likely to be very helpful in helping them out with learning the ropes of D.C. They're going to have to turn elsewhere, whether it's to some of the more experienced Democratic candidates from Illinois or that they've met in other states. It's going to be a lot more difficult for them, and they don't have the political clout in the background of a Gutierrez helping Garcia out, for example. So they're going to be, overall, they're going to be less effective.
Well, it's CBOE used to do a, they only did it the first couple of years when I was on the board, and we always had a Washington board meeting. In the first, I think it was a year or two, then we decided it wasn't worth it. We actually did a meet and greet on the Hill.
Mm-hmm.
You ever go to one of those things where you get, you know, the rooms on the end, you get the bar, a couple of bars set up, and the guys that serve the shrimp and the whole, talk about, those guys must make a fortune, but I just assume they do. But I think the staffers are spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
The, Manny Weber could be one of the best staffers ever because he's pretty quick, he's very personal, he's light on his feet. Manny, I'm going to say you could easily walk in, grab a drink, shake hands with a few people, look at a badge and say, I love you guys. By the way, who are you guys?
Mm-hmm.
Do one of those things. And I'll bet you could drop 5 or 6 shrimp on your dish, knock them down without ever stopping talking, finish your drink, grab another one at the other bar at the end and be out of there in probably 2:30 to 2:45 and have 6 shrimp and 2 drinks down and be gone.
Absolutely.
They were masters at it.
I was born for that.
You gotta be light on your feet. You gotta
especially
look
the shrimp part, right?
That's right.
Grab those shrimp and cocktail sauce.
The cocktail on the way out would probably be a double. You know? But those guys were masters at it. But the guys that came in, and one of the guys, like you're talking about, was a Democrat. God, the guy was huge. He's bigger than me. Big redheaded guy. And, well, those days I was 6'4", so be bigger than me was a big guy. And so he had just been elected from a district in Reading, Pennsylvania. And the guy's a Democrat, and the district had been Republican forever, Brendan. And so he says, I was the sheriff. We had this huge robbery or murder or something and bleep. So he goes, we find out where the guy was. I went with, we had this big arrest, because it was no big deal. It's just, we happened to get lucky, basically, and we arrested these guys and, you know, prosecuted them. And he goes, my department did a spectacular job, but I'm this big hero. So out of the blue, I don't know if the guy's got a health problem or not, the Republican guy says he's quit. And there's actually way more of a turnover in the House than most people. I mean, if you go to, you know, some bar someplace and people are grousing about government, every person's going to tell you you can't get somebody out of the House there for 100 years. Nothing can be further from the truth.
Oh, no. There's a tremendous turnover in the House.
Yeah,
because with 435, there's very little that most of them can do. And if and they're most vulnerable in their first time for up for re-election.
Right, and they and after two to four years, you might just say this isn't worth it. Get the hell out. But anyway, he says the only thing that saved me was I was able to keep. It was a the guy loved me, even though he's a Republican guy. And this is back when you could like Democrats could like Republicans and vice versa. He says he recommended to his staff that they stay on, and out of the seven people, four or five of them stayed. Because if they didn't, he goes, I wouldn't know where the bathroom was even yet. And so he goes, they dump him on the two entry level committees, the Agricultural Committee, when the Mississippi River was totally over flooding. This is like in 1991 or whatever it was. And he goes, so we got all eyes are on us about this thing. And the other one was the Armed Services. Not the the double secret one that what's his name, the guy on North Side's on, is the one you want to be on. The one where they actually tell you all the stuff that's top secret and everything. What's that one? The one where they'll tell you about what the CIA is doing and all that crap you can't tell anybody about. What's that committee?
It's the, I'm not sure.
Well, it's the one where you know only the real senior people get on that one. Mike Quigley's on it. I don't, Matt, if you can look that one. You know what I'm talking about? The
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's the committee where they tell people all the kind of clandestine military stuff they've done and how many drone strikes.
Intelligence?
And, yeah, military. I think it's Military Intelligence Committee. Well, the other one, the Armed Services one, where you just figure out how many tanks you're going to buy. That's an entry level committee. Well, of course, he goes. His town was, shall we say, very gay phobic in 1992 or whatever this was, and this all of a sudden they were voting on the gays in the military. He goes, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with this one. If I vote yes, I'm like out of a job. If I vote no, I don't care if there's gays in the military. Why would that bother me? You know. So I mean, right away the guy had like a crisis his first 2 months in there. But like you say, it's interesting. Whether you're in the news, whether you're not in the news, whether you're trying to do good, whether you can retain your staffers, and there is you know fairly dramatic turnover, I think, in the House. But so yeah, I mean, so what people are voting for. I don't think they're going to get running. I mean, and last night I went home. I'm listening. You know, like I said they're saying, "Oh, everybody wants to just be an obstructionist now." And now tonight the big fight is whether is Trump's coming on national TV, kind of unprecedented. I mean, I'm really like what 2 weeks before the State of the Union, and he's coming on, and now the Democrats want an hour afterward, which they should get.
They should get because I mean Trump's history has been that. He does not tell the truth. He plays loose and fast with the facts. And, I mean, regardless of whether you support Trump or don't support him, I think that's incontrovertible. And I mean, even if you look at the most recent one, or one of the more recent ones, about Syria, the troop withdrawal, where now he's denying that he ever said they'd be out in short order, or 30 days.
Yep.
But the fact is that he said, they're coming out now. He said they're coming out and the troops are coming back within 30 days. Then he extended it to 120 days. Then Bolton goes to the Middle East and says, well, it's undetermined because we have to make sure that ISIS is defeated. Trump had said ISIS is defeated. So, and he will deny that. And somehow with a straight face, with all the conviction that he can muster, he will say, I never said that.
Isn't that, imagine how freeing up that must be of your thought process.
Mm-hmm.
How many? I'm going to ask you. What is your guess? And what is Maddie? Mean we're with. We got to tell you after we come back from break. We got to tell you about last night. I actually have Joel. We'll talk about it later. But how many people do you think actually believe him when he says the Chinese are paying the tariffs? Why does this one bother me so much? But it does.
I don't know. But you know this is a Seinfeld moment. There was an episode in Seinfeld where Jerry was going for a lie detector test to impress a woman, and you know he had been watching some TV program that was you know debatable as whether it was manly enough.
Beverly Hills 90210, is that what it was?
What was that?
It was it 90210,
something like that. It was one of those you know
those 90s shows.
Soap, yeah, those soap opera adult soap operas were at night, and Jerry denied that he watched it, but he did. And he goes to George because his girlfriend was a cop and said, well, would you take a lie detector test? So Jerry says, sure. And then he panics because he knows he's going to have to lie. And he goes to George and says, you know, if I'm going to beat this, I have to go to the biggest liar that I know. How do I beat this? And George looks at him and says, it's not a lie if you believe it. If you believe what you're saying is the truth, it's not a lie. And, you know, I think that's true with the administration currently, that moment to moment, he believes that whatever he says is the truth. Even if a minute ago he said the exact opposite. Now, if you said it's raining, no, it's sunshine. I never said it was raining. It's incredible.
But, Brandon and Maddie, if we were 100 years old and were running for office when we had been 35 or 40, you can get away with that. You could go to a train stop in some town, say whatever you damn well please, and the next train stop, say whatever you damn well please, and there's nobody following you around writing it all down.
But
in this day and age.
Or recording it.
Yeah, how do you even think you can get away with that?
It boggles my mind.
Anyway, S&P futures up 17, Dow futures up 180, NASDAQ futures up 52. Maddie, we'll talk about this later, but Maddie is applying for the new Bachelor thing because he couldn't believe the show last night. Mr. Joel and Connor, we come back. Boy, we missed Joel for a couple of weeks, Maddie, right? With the two holidays.
That's right.
Good to hear from him. Now that Michigan has become a basketball school and a good one, we'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure.
But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Jerry? Just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
I think there's a reason why he played that before Joel comes on. S&P futures up 17, Dow futures up 180, Nasdaq futures up 50. It's easy to giggle when we're rallying, isn't it? A lot more fun, isn't it, I would say, for although I could use a gold rally, and gold, I think, is going the wrong way today for me, even though I've had a good month.
But isn't it true that I mean, brokers make money whether the market goes up or down. It's a movement. You want the movement. You don't want things to stay stable.
No, you're missing the last 8 years. We'll talk about this in a second. DAX up 85 points, 0.8%. FTSE up 72. It's all full 1%. These guys got two good days in a row going. CAC up 65, 1.4. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 165, 20,204. Which is a nice bounce, but still, 20,000 is not the number those guys want to be. Shanghai down 6, 25, 26. These guys have been around 2,500. They don't want to be below that. Hang Seng up 29, 25,875. We've got oil up for like the third day in a row. 49.30, see if we can get to 50. It's up 78 cents. Brent up 96 cents. Natural gas back to $3. I guess we're going to get coal tomorrow. But still nowhere near the 450 it was a couple weeks ago. RBOB gas 135. Gold, whack, whack, unfortunately. Gold down 550, silver down 7 cents. Maybe what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start on the Edens and Kennedy. We do have an issue on the Eisenhower, though, outbound just before Harlem. There was a car fire on the right shoulder that's causing delays. We're from the old post office out to Mannheim at 39 minutes. Now to Route 390, it's 52 minutes. So some congestion on the outbound side of the Ike due to that earlier car fire. Stevenson looks okay. Southside expressways are all quiet. Weather today, we go up to a high of 42, and then temperatures begin to fall tonight, and it's going to get cold beginning tomorrow, and it'll feel like January again after we've had this warm spell. But enjoy the morning and early afternoon as it'll be 42, and then temperatures falling this evening. Right now it's partly cloudy and 39 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 71. Right now it's clear and 41. In sports, the Clemson Tigers are your 2018-2019 college football national champions. They took it to Alabama last night. 44-16 was the final. In hockey, Blackhawks lost to the Flames 4-3. Chief.
Are we going to say that good drugs?
You could say that.
I just did. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Chief, what did I miss? I heard you bring my name up right when Maddie put me on hold.
We were talking about...
Just say you didn't do it.
Yeah, just say you didn't do it.
We were talking about Trump bending the truth, and we brought up the Seinfeld line where George says, remember, Jerry, it's not a lie if you believe it. So we played that drop.
So I just said, was there any particular reason why I played it before you came on? All right, Joel, I understand you're short time here this morning, so tell us all you know about the market and Michigan and other stuff in the 2 weeks you weren't here. How was Christmas? How was New Year's? All in 5 minutes.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. I had to put the pressure on. Well, first of all, market rebounding nicely here. I'm looking for a little bit more upside here. Take back half of that, you know, the big break that we have, 2650 roughly in the S&Ps. And coming into earnings season is going to be a big earnings season, as always. Sports. Well, I don't want to talk about the Peach Bowl, but I will talk about Michigan basketball, number two in the country, looking good, undefeated, one of three undefeated teams. And talking football, man, who can compete with Clemson? I mean, unbelievable, and that quarterback's only a freshman, and unbelievable performance there. I love seeing Alabama get stomped, but, man, they got that freshman quarterback, freshman running back. Dabo Sweeney is just doing a hell of a job. I don't see how Michigan can compete with that team next year. And it's a little bit early to be thrown in the towel, but they just look unbelievable.
We'll save the details for next week, but I'm going to lob this one out there. I am so tired of some of these schools essentially finding ways to pay people, because, I mean, I hear from all walks of life, as you know, that, and so do you. And now when we add this amazingly sinister drug thing on top of it. I mean, you start paying people and you start drugging them up, I don't see how you beat them. Just saying.
It's true. I mean, I just look at that quarterback. I'm not sure what he's on, but
I don't know if he's on.
You know, amazing coaching, amazing playing, and, you know, it's tough to compete with these guys.
That quarterback will be the number one overall pick when he comes out, assuming he stays healthy. That kid is unreal.
Oh, my God.
He's unreal.
Yeah, he's got size, a freshman.
And when he has a little bit of weight, when he grows into his body, he's going to be a really tough son of a gun.
6'6", he's a strong arm, accurate, he can run a little bit, he's tough. He's going to be the number one pick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it sure seems like it. And probably, well, his junior year, not his senior year either. He can't come out the junior year, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, yep, he's got to wait. So, and then we, you know, and I know you don't want to talk NFL too much, so we can just pass on that tough loss. I was rooting for the Bears there. New Orleans looks tough. I'm just looking for the chalk. I'm looking for New Orleans and KC in the Super Bowl, and I like KC even though they're down that running back. I really like that quarterback that they have, Patrick Mahomes. He's unbelievable. So I'll go with the KC, New Orleans, but nothing special there.
I don't know. I'm kind of a fader of the Rams. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they don't get nicked this weekend.
Well, I know the Lions won't be there. They won't be there anytime soon. So, lived in Chicago for a while, so like to cheer for the Bears.
Well, the Lions were special a few years ago, Joel. No, you got to go, but they actually had one of the worst teams in football, and they were one of the teams that was through the salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
They managed to pay a lot of people and still be lousy.
Yeah, they pay a quarterback a lot of money, and you don't really need that. A lot of teams are, you know, a lot of the teams, and I think I heard or I read that five of the highest paid quarterbacks. Their team did not make the playoffs, so there's a lot more to it.
When the Lions were ready to pay and did pay Stafford, they didn't pay Ngamaganso to keep their defense going.
Yeah, now he's playing for the Rams.
Mm-hmm. Well, the
a couple Lions. Golden Tate had a great game for Philadelphia that they traded.
That's what I was just going to mention. The Bears would have liked it if he'd have kept Golden Tate. he was a difference maker. Joel, I talk to you at length next week, buddy. Have a good one.
All right, go Blue.
I think everybody's in this mindset that we're going to at least come back halfway to two-thirds of the way. Two-thirds would be a Fibonacci retracement, Brendan. We'll see. I just keep seeing the, it depends on which way you look. I mean, on the one hand, you know, companies are making some money. You see this constant, every week, a couple of companies, especially in the medical community, this concentration. And they had somebody, I don't know, one of the stations I was flipping through yesterday was talking about how there are serious concentration problems in some of these areas, and we have serious, especially in healthcare, and we have, he goes, but there's no way on earth the combination of this Congress and this administration tackles any serious problem. And that's a serious indictment, I think, and it's hard to debate it, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't see how you do. And I don't, I mean, you look at these problems and these issues. We're finding out, I mean, I think Chicago is unfortunately in Illinois is the canary in the coal mine. Because we're starting to see that the money that you think you don't owe, that your city and state owes, every year now is coming at you. And to a certain extent, at the federal level, we've been, you know, they've done it with mirrors. They can borrow more, and they have. Matter of fact, we have a Republican administration, or whatever the hell he is, essentially in the midst of a massive budget deficit, are cutting taxes under the auspices that we'll end up with more money than we cut, which is such BS. I can't even go there.
Yeah, whatever happened to Republican fiscal determination of not going into debt, not running up deficits?
Neither side cares about that. That's clear to me.
I know, but for years and years, Republicans were saying we're the fiscal responsible.
They said it, but they never did it. In my lifetime, Bill Clinton's the only one that actually cared about that. In my lifetime,
That's scary. That's the truth, man.
Yeah, and so they said it, but have never done it. Democrats did it once and have never done it since. So both sides are equally complicit in this, and I think it's the most important thing, and it's the one thing no one talks about and no one does anything about.
Well, when you say Bill Clinton did it, I mean, you go back.
I'm saying his administration.
Right. Well, if you don't mind, I'll rephrase. It happened under his administration's watch.
Well, that's fine. I mean, if you don't want to give him credit for anything, I don't care. But I'm just saying,
not what I'm saying.
No, I don't care. I'm just saying it happened once in my lifetime, and that's when. And it hasn't happened since, and it didn't happen before.
And it's going way far in the opposite direction right now.
Yeah. And I'm trying to be a little bit more. You're correct, Matty, but you need to be a little more rigorous, in my opinion. That he had a little bit of a landslide in the sense that we had the huge run up in stock prices during his administration, and in housing prices, and we have the ridiculous tax thing that were when MattyWeber.com ran from 2 cents to $200, and you sold it to Brendan. Brendan had to pay capital gains, or you get to pay capital gains on the $200. When it went back down to 2 cents, Brendan only got to deduct $3,000. So the tax law really favors these boom and bust cycles, which is something, as you know, I rail about all the time, and people probably don't know what I'm talking about, but that's unconscionable. And we're seeing it again here, I think. We're seeing it with the Amazon and the other kind of things like that. And it's, I don't see how, you know, that number, the $3,000 you can write off as a capital loss, is the same as when I entered the business when the market was 800. And yet, you're not going to get anybody to lower that number because they just want to stiff those people. I mean, and it's a crazy situation. But the odd part is we have people that are supposedly no better that are proposed to be economists, and they will tell you that the people in Washington have not helped the Fed at all in terms of fiscal stimulus, and it's the Fed is one's carried us the last 10 years and has done all the heavy lift. Anyway, come back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri, but fact is we got a $20 trillion deficit. They did something. Right back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamales, Mr. Brendan Cronin, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures now only up 14.50. They're up 20 when we came in. Dow futures up 150. NASDAQ futures up 45, and backed by popular demand because the holidays landed on a Tuesday. Mr. Kenny Polcari. Kenny, I miss you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year, buddy.
Thank you, and to you. How's everything?
All right,
it's nice to be back, let me tell you.
You didn't cheat on Christmas Eve and only have six fishes, did you?
No. No, I didn't. I did what I usually do, and you had all the rescues that went along, but it was another great season. You know, it's I think it's the greatest night of the year, especially when you have all those different fish dishes. You know, everyone really enjoys it.
I can see Kenny palming a fish one year when he only can find six.
No, I didn't. You have to have seven because that's a tradition, right?
Yeah.
You need to have seven different fish. It doesn't have to be the same fish, but it has to be seven different fish dishes.
Oh, fish dishes. So you could have, if you got like a tremendous whitefish, you could use it twice as long as you have different dishes.
Right. I mean, you could have two shrimp dishes if you want, right?
Oh, okay.
One prepared like a scampi, one prepared like a feta shrimp. Even though it's shrimp, it is a different dish. So, you know, some people would say that works. I, on the other hand, would say no. You have to have actually seven different fishes. But listen, whatever makes it work for you.
But you are a purist.
I am a purist.
Speaking of which, what do you think of this market? Are you pure with the market?
I'm not really surprised because listen, like I think you and I discussed the last time I was on that the markets had this massive overreaction. What I thought was a massive overreaction to some of the data that was out there. A lot of it driven by the technology, driven by algorithms, which don't have any emotion to it or don't necessarily are able to interpret or understand words and tone and intonation. And so you got this massive move in the markets, which ended up, I think, you know, when people had the opportunity to sit back and look at it, realize, you know, maybe this is a little bit overdone. It's not necessarily as disastrous as the action would have you think. And then look what's happened over the last couple of days. In fact, some U.S. macro data is better than expected. The falling off the cliff has all of a sudden subsided. The Fed has come out and clarified what they've been saying all along is that although they're data dependent, they're not set in stone. So, you know, the three or four rate hikes that everyone thought was going to happen is now down to two. And yesterday, Atlanta Fed President Raphael Bostic said, listen, there may only be one in 2019. And so I think, you know, markets have calmed down. And look, we've shot right back up. Futures are up another 18 points today. Trade talks in China are going along. It really looks like both sides ultimately do want to make a deal. Will they come to a deal? The jury's still out. But listen, we're closer today than we were last week. And the market respects that. And the market is telling you that's what it wants. It wants a deal. It wants this trade war to stop. And it wants people to come to the table and make a deal.
You think there's
that's what you're seeing.
You think there's been the amount of collateral damage is a little more than people are thinking? I do. I mean,
Well, when you mean the collateral damage, you mean what, to other asset classes?
To farmers, to things like that. I mean, you've seen properties changing hands and everything now already.
Right, but I guess we'll see that the collateral damage, you know, as the talks kind of continue, and we see where they end up. Then ultimately, I think you'll see whatever collateral damage is going to be. Certainly, there has been collateral damage up till now, just because the war has gone on and it's been so unsettling, right? So you've seen some of that collateral damage. Although I think once they figure it out, a lot of that collateral damage will repair itself, right? And then the markets will adjust.
Well, I mean, it depends. Yeah, I just, as you know, Kenny, actually, I think you and I think a lot of like on this stuff, which is probably a little more cutting to the chase. And I don't, the idea that we've slapped the new Fed guy back in line and he's going to keep pouring money in whenever we need it, and all of a sudden we're going to have the next 10 years are the same as the last 10 years, I don't buy that for a second. I mean, even though I agree with you, we went down a little too fast, too far, whether that's a market problem or people just being able to get out of their ETFs that quickly or to react too quick or whatever. I honestly don't know what causes the pace or not the pace. We never really had an 8 or 9% down day. So in one way, you could say it was actually all pretty orderly.
We didn't have an 8 or 8% down day, but you did have moves that were certainly much larger than we've seen, right? We had 4 and 5 and 6% down days, and we had the market kind of, you know, down every day, where ultimately we're down 20% in a matter of weeks, right? Much faster, I think, than it might have happened in the old days, right? When you and I were younger.
Well, I was there when we did 30% over 3 days. So, you know, in 1987, right, we were 32-35% in 3 days. So it's, that was pretty bad.
Yeah, okay, but that's right. But that happened over a period. That happened over a very short period in terms of, like you said, 3 days. A lot of that also driven by, you know, it was interesting, driven by that new product at the time that was introduced called portfolio insurance, right, which again was a product designed around automation and risk management software run by computers. And so, you know, we could talk about that all day long, but then a number of years went by before we ever had the type of action that we just saw in the last 8 weeks, right, or 9 weeks of when the market crashed, and a lot of it driven by some of the complex strategies, some of the complex ETFs that are out there, some of the new products that, you know, are much more complex than just going out and buying, you know, Coca-Cola or Abbott Laboratories or IBM. And they use futures and derivatives to amplify and leverage the positions, which I think is part of what we all saw. Now, like it or not, this is the new world we live in, so everyone's got to accept it. But I think when you see, and I think what you're going to see, is that action, that movement has created a lot of opportunities. A lot of names got unnecessarily beaten up, but created great value for a long-term investor. Great value for a long-term investor, and as long as you have a tough stomach and you got some money on the side to put to work,
but how do you,
I think that was a gift.
How do you mean? Well, I mean, obviously, I watch you guys on the TV most of the day. Once in a while, switch to something else, but I'd rather see you and Jen than the rest of the gang. There's a logic that I never quite got, Kenny. If it's almost like, don't take this wrong, it's almost like women buying dresses. It was $100. It's $40. It's a buy. Maybe it should never have been 100 in the first place, and then it really was 60, and the guy made it 100 to make it look. I mean, you get even what I call pretty bright people on CNBC, just because I watch them the most, will say, well, the stock was 60, now it's 40, it's a bargain. Well, what does the 60 have to do with anything other than the fact that it once traded there?
Well, okay, I think you're right, and so in that sense, you know, prices were extended. But that's exactly the point. And that's why I think you had such a vicious sell-off, is that people realized all of a sudden, based on the changing environment, that, you know, why is it trading at $100? It shouldn't be trading at $100, based on this new outlook. And so therefore there's this reevaluation, right? This reassessment. And some names go back to levels that are more reasonable, while others got absolutely clobbered, which creates even more of an opportunity. And I think that's what you're seeing.
You're 100% correct, Kenny. I just wanted you to explain it a little more, because when people, If one of your customers comes in and sells 9 zillion futures in the morning, every stack gets sold. The company that could have dollar for dollar
right.
in the bank is going to get sold, even though they
That's
still
right.
got the dollars in the bank. And I think it,
right.
Because we've done some of that here with David. He's picked four or five stacks that if these things get down to these kind of levels, we've had a few few of our clients are actually pretty good in the oil industry and actually did some stuff in the, when some of these stocks got beaten up in the oil industry. So you're absolutely right. That's the way you, what it's hard to do though when 500 are getting clobbered to try and pick out the 10 you really want. I mean, that's work.
It is hard to do, but listen, if it were easy, everyone would be doing it, right?
God, yes.
So it is
yes.
work. You're absolutely right, and it takes some time and it takes some analysis. And remember, it's very dynamic. It's not static, right? You don't just buy something and just leave it. It is dynamic, so you have to kind of stay on top of it. But honestly, that's kind of what makes it interesting, and that's what makes it enjoyable for guys like me and you that have been in this business for, 38 plus years, and want to remain in business because I enjoy the excitement of it. Yes,
well, me too.
Is it uncomfortable on the way down, especially the way it went down the last 8 weeks? Absolutely.
Kenny, I'm going to ask you this question.
Some of the value created, it creates huge opportunity.
I'm going to ask you this. I'm sitting here with Brendan, and Brendan is, of retirement age, young man, but of retirement age. You're not 25, although you're not as old as me. You're 28. how is it that we have people in Washington, and I'm not asking you for a political comment, it seemed to me like they're locked in the 1920s. I listen to this Wilbur Ross. Does he sound like Methuselah to you? If we can drive.
Okay, but Wilbur Ross is locked in the 1920s.
Well, but I'm saying he's running the place.
What's he pushing? 80 years old? I mean, he is locked in the 1920s. Listen, good guy. I get it. But he is locked in kind of a past era.
But my point is, hopefully we're not that when we're 80. But I'm saying,
no, I would like to think I'm not that one. I'd like to think, you and I are more dynamic. And although, I might have been born in 1961, the fact is I'm very much in the 21st century, right? So, and I'd like to think you are too. But you're right. When you hear some people in Washington, they appear to be stuck in a time gone by. And
but
I think
seems,
that's part of the problem.
Does it seem as dangerous to you as it does to me? I came in yesterday with a report and all the dollar-denominated and euro-denominated debt coming out of China, and all of a sudden is becoming non-performing and this and that, with the Rwanda going down, all of a sudden these people can't. And these are debts that Americans basically have given, loan the money to China. And then I get a guy like Wilbur Ross saying, we're bringing China to their knees, their economy is going basically down a rat hole. And I'm thinking, this guy's in charge, doesn't he realize that that's a problem? That's not a good thing? I mean,
No, well, he should realize it, but I think but I think a lot of that is also rhetoric. I mean, on the one hand, I'd like to think that they've got to present this hard line. Look at us, look what we're doing. But in the background, they're much more. I'd like to think that they're much more cooperative, and that what you say up front creates a lot of headlines. But what really kind of what you do in the background is working together and cooperating, trying to come to the right answer. And I think that's actually what's happening.
Just remember, I hope your lips to God's ears, Kenny. Great to have you back. Just remember Oz. They turned away the curtain, and the guy had no clothes on, basically. The emperor had no clothes. Let's hope it's
don't
not.
Don't listen to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, don't listen to Kenny. You take care of yourself, buddy. SP Futures up 17, Dow Futures up 175. NASDAQ Futures up 46. We'll have Mr. Carl Denninger after the break.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi. This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamale, Mr. Brennan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 18 now. They were 20, they were 15, now they're 18. So we've been bullish the whole morning. Dow up 198, almost 200 again. NASDAQ futures up 51. Mr. Carl, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I know you're long the market. You're going crazy. Amazon's running back up. Micron, all those things that you own like 10% of and so forth. So you're happy.
You know, Bill Clinton never ran a surplus. Not for one year. And by the way, that was during the time that I was running MCS, and so I was very much, you know, dialed in to exactly what was going on. Because you have to be when you're a CEO. That's part of your job.
Well, what? Who did?
No one. That's the whole point. Is that so? Reagan was the one that pioneered the let's play games with the budget numbers and claim that receipts for Medicare and FICA are on budget. In other words, we can use them as part of our spending base, but the payments that the system makes are off budget.
Okay, but now, see, now you're a guy who wants to look actually at the numbers. You're not supposed to do that.
Well, you know, you and I, you know, if I could run my bank account the way that the federal government counts deficits, I would never run out of money because all the deposits I make count, but all the withdrawals don't.
Well, I understand that, but I mean, that doesn't make you or I very popular. Nobody wants.
Well, I understand that, but you know what? It's not about popularity; it's about facts. And this is where the problem comes in with both the Democrats and the Republicans, because they point at Reagan as being some kind of genius in terms of what he did economically. Okay, that is a flat out lie. What he was a genius at was fraud. Because he's the one that introduced this. every president since him has exploited it. So Bill Clinton comes along and claims he ran a surplus. He did not run a surplus, not for a single year. All right. In fact, he ran he had one year when the deficit was actually reasonably small. It was like $100 billion or something like that. But it was still a deficit. It was not a surplus. And every president since him has used this as a foil to claim things that didn't really happen, including the current one that we have, who says, well, we ran $830 billion last year in deficit. No, you didn't. You ran $1.3 trillion. And this fiction, the ability to do it, disappears before 2024. If we have a recession, it will disappear immediately.
Let the official record reflect, not the record according to Carl in Chief, which nobody wants to hear, by the way. The official record, 1998, $69 billion surplus, 1999, $126, 2000, which is when he left office, 236, 201, 128, and then we've been mired in the doldrums since. So the official record shows that, but not very many years do we have one of those. A couple right after World War II, as you might expect. And in 1969, there was a paltry $3 billion on that one. How do we manage to do that with the Vietnam War going?
Well, the way you do it is you actually keep the books and you raise taxes. Remember, taxes were very high during that period of time.
Carl, I've been cleaning here, and I mentioned it before. You find that a piece of paper you kept 9 years ago, you read it again and you realize why you kept it, so you don't really throw anything out. I'm just kind of maneuvering stuff around. But I'm looking for a piece, and I can't seem to find yet, which doesn't mean I won't. It had to do with every single president. You probably know this better than me. All the way back to JFK, did something essentially nefarious with the budget numbers. I forget what JFK did. It was relatively innocuous, but I think LBJ took the Social Security surplus and instead of reporting it separately, because at that time it was a big surplus, reported it as part of the whole number. I think that was LBJ's trick. And then Tricky Dick did something after that. But every single one of them essentially detracted from the rigorousness of the numbers, which is, I think, what you're talking about, correct?
Yeah, basically, if you want to know what the truth is, the Treasury has made it very easy for you to find the truth. And that is you simply go to the debt to the penny series, and you take, you know, any two dates and, you know, subtract one from the other, and there it is. Since the federal government runs on fiscal years that end on September 30th, then the actual deficit is simple. You take the two numbers from the two September 30th, subtract one from the other, and there it is. None of the years during Clinton's presidency was there a lower federal debt outstanding at the end of a fiscal than on the first day. Therefore, he never ran a surplus, period.
So what is the difference? Is it the Social Security number?
But remember, the politicians all like to take Social Security and Medicare and put them together and claim entitlements, entitlements, entitlements. The truth is not that complicated. Social Security last fiscal year ran about a 13% cash basis fiscal funding deficit. Okay, in other words, it paid out 13% more than it took in taxes.
Right, so when Johnson changed that, the number was dramatically the other way. I can still, when I was very, very young, which I was at the time, I do recall way back them saying that the federal deficit was, you know, $30 billion or something, and if you add the Social Security in, it's actually a surplus of something. I mean, there was, and Johnson just gave it the one number. So if he said you were even, in fact, Social Security in those days had such a huge surplus to it because you were adding stuff in before people started to croak that you were. That you, if you counted that number in, it really was a huge disclaimer. But just to go back to what you're saying, give us a quick example. 1998, they're showing a $69 billion surplus. And I'm gonna guess, since you're always right at this stuff, that if you look at the end of 98, we've got more debt than we did at the beginning of 98. So somehow or another, the $69 billion number is, shall we say, a prevarication. The question is, how do they get, how, How does it get to 69 from the number you and I think is correct? I mean, what's the calculation they're doing there?
Well, if you look in the Treasury statements, which are very easy to get now, the really, really old ones are not easy to get. But the current stuff is all published going back a few years. And you want the monthly ones, you can get them daily, but it's kind of pointless to do it. The monthly roll-ups are the one you want, and what you want is the September numbers, because that's, the end of the fiscal, right? So that's got the full year in it, and it's actually very easy to figure out, because that is essentially a cash flow statement, both for receipts and disbursements. And as a result, you look at that, and what you find is that they just simply steal the Social Security and Medicare receipts, and yet the liability side of it is off budget. There's a cute little game that goes on there where they say, well, we didn't really spend that much. Yes, you did. Okay. And they actually call it out. If you look at the MTS, there's on budget and off budget. And they actually separate it out for you. So it's right there.
Well, when they say, you were just mentioning that everything's there for you. Well, if everything's there, how the hell do they get to the off budget piece?
Well, because that's what Congress says that they're allowed to do, so that's what they do.
Oh, off-budget means where? In Bermuda?
Off-budget means we just don't report it in the budget numbers.
Okay, but it totals up in the total number somehow.
Well, of course it does, because, that's the funny thing about bank statements. The bank never lets you lie about those. Cash flow statements are truth, always.
Well, I think that is the truth. I mean, I agree with you. I just... I'm just... This week I'm kind of fairly concerned. I thought maybe we would address some of these worldwide debt issues, especially with China. And all I hear is cheering about how we're sending China down a rat hole. And now that we've absolutely smacked this new Fed guy back in line, everybody's convinced we could do another 10 years like the last 10 years, Carl. Just pour money in and markets go up and everybody's happy. I don't think we got it in us, but maybe we... Doesn't mean I'm not slightly bullish here, and I love the fact that my stocks or my people go up and I get to roll the puts up and lock it in. But I'd put money to work today at these prices in a nanosecond, but I wouldn't do any of it uncovered, unsupported, unhedged.
Well, that's the whole problem. See, here's the issue is that when the fiction in the Social Security thing again, it's a relatively small number. If you raised the 2 percentages, 6.2, right?
Yep.
If you made that 7%, then that deficit would be erased on a current year basis. Now, of course, it's going to change from year to year. Point being, there's a bunch of special issue treasuries that are there, and they're there because the pig goes through the python. You have baby booms and baby busts. They get drawn down, and we can rebalance that system fairly easily without a lot of pain. I mean, nobody's going to like a tax increase, but it's not going to be crazy. The problem with Medicare is that last year, Medicare's tax receipts only funded 26% of its spending.
That's not very much.
Well, they're going to run out of the ability to fund the rest with those special issue treasuries, which get issued back into the market as real ones, of course, when that happens, because, the Treasury doesn't have any money. They're running a deficit, so therefore, if you cash one, they have to issue another one, right?
Yep.
Same. When that runs out, then by law, Medicare cannot spend money it doesn't have, just like Social Security can't. So the two options are change the law, in which case there's an immediate $700 billion addition to the deficit number that shows up, or you screw everybody out of three-quarters of the Medicare spending.
And actually, Medicare is probably better than private insurance in driving costs down.
Yes, and so both of those options, and by the way, to try to fix it with a tax increase, you'd have to make the Medicare tax 15%.
That would be a lot.
Well, that's like four times what it is now.
Well, we're going to end up, I honestly believe, and I don't really want to see it, that we're doing deja vu all over again, Yogi, and the Reagan massive tax cut of 1981 was followed a year later, which nobody wants to hear, by a tax increase, which was the biggest one ever, and we're going to end right. up doing the same thing here. We're going all these payroll taxes are going to go up. The regressive side is going to go higher, while the other side for the you know, the, I'd say the wealthier is going lower. And we're going to end up.
Well, it's much worse than that, because one of the things that Obamacare did to people, and most people don't realize this, if you live in a Medicare expansion state, okay, and you get forced into Medicaid as a consequence of your income being too low, from age 55 to 65, when you qualify for Medicare, all of what gets spent on your medical care under Medicaid is a lien against your estate. Under the law, this is required. Okay? Now, in those states, now you say, well, I don't use a lot of medical care, so therefore I don't really care, even though I'm poor, but, you know, I got a house, right? There's a problem with this. In a number of states, they have capitated Medicaid. They've turned around and sold it off to private companies that capitate it. So basically what that means is every Medicaid person gets this capitated amount, say $400 a month, whether they use medical care or not. In those states, you are accumulating a $400, $500, or $600 a month claim against your estate simply by being on Medicaid past the age of 50.
Well, Kyle, the people that I know, and unfortunately, fortunately, I know a lot of them. Anybody that I know between the ages of 55 and 65 that are scrambling for their own insurance are damn near in a panic right now.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the only way it works under today's thing is if you keep your income around $20,000 for a single person, you get the maximum subsidies, and as a person of my, I mean, I'm 55, okay? I can buy a subsidized Obamacare policy for about $15-$20 a month, which is nothing. Of course, that's not really the truth. The truth is $900, right? But I don't get the bill. The taxpayer does. And that's not recoverable against my estate.
Okay, now let me ask you this. If you are, you know, somewhere to the spot, whether you're getting money or not getting, but it seems to me that the bewitching spot is about 50 grand, right? Where you don't get help or do get help. But what people are telling me, Carl, and I'm asking you because I think you know more about this, it seems to me, and Brendan, if you know more, please pipe in. The issue now, it went from the rate being very expensive, okay, to the rate
right.
being very expensive, and oh, by the way, your deductible is unconscionable. But now what I've heard is the deductible is actually down a little bit, but you're going to pay 30%, 25% of the entire bill after that. Well, there's no way on earth somebody who's making 40 grand a year and goes in and gets a heart bypass and the bill's some sort of inflated 100 grand is paying 30 grand plus the 6,000 deductible. There's no way that guy's got that money in the bank. I mean,
that's right. The only person that it works for is someone like me that actually doesn't need medical care, and therefore I can escape the screwing, okay, essentially. But if you are in a position where you actually need it, then there is no good option. And the you know, if you can manage your income successfully because you're not subject to the whims of the market, you know, getting fired or whatever have you, then that's fine. I can do that. Most people can't. The nightmare scenario is that you're working a relatively low-wage job. You get halfway through the year, you get laid off, can't get another job. You get forced into Medicaid. And once you have that data in the system, in the computers, CMS finds out about it immediately. You get shoved into there, and there's nothing you can do about it. And this lien gets created that you have absolutely no control over.
I'm gonna say, Carl, that if you have something, what I'm saying is you're going to be screwed more than anybody. Hope you don't, because I want you healthy, bud. But if you all of a sudden have this horrible pain in your right abdomen, to where you're not going to be able to ask around who can do an appendectomy for what price, and actually just get hauled into Northwestern or somebody, and they find out you've got dough and no insurance, I'm going to say you pay four times the rate anybody else does.
Well, yeah, and you know what the thing is that that's exactly what they do to you, is that there's, and this is why this entire system, it's where the entire problem lies. It's where the budgetary problem lies, it's where the economic problem lies, and if we don't address it and force this back into the 4-5% of GDP range from the near 20 it is today, we don't do this within the next year or two, It's going to blow up the state budgets. It's going to blow up the federal budget. And it's going to blow up the economy and all asset prices. Not just stocks. Real estate is going to go down the toilet because the local governments, this is what's squeezing them and forcing your property taxes up. If it's bad now, Medicare can't pay.
It is horrendous now.
Forced into this, it's going to be 100 times worse.
It's horrendous now because in Illinois, I don't know if I mentioned last time you ran, my significant other who does real estate in some of the areas here that are, I won't say bleep hole, I'll say depressed. There's houses for $56,000 that are paying $8,500 in taxes. Three times.
And you know what? It's not limited to areas like Illinois either. I am right now working in a state for my late parents, and their home has not seen any change in value since 1995.
You are your creditor.
Well, by the way, you know what the really bad part of that is? That's in nominal dollars.
Yeah.
Now go ahead and figure it out on an inflation basis and tell me how much it lost.
Well, one of the contributors of the show has a place on the near north side, and you know, a nice area, and they've, you know, somebody there must be politically connected or something, but their taxes haven't gone up for a while. I was driving him home and he opens up the letter and it's up 30%.
And I said, well, you know what? I owned a house in Deerfield for a while, and I still track it because I have the address, right? And Zillow's got the tax numbers and everything, so yeah, it's easy to look up. I don't even have to go to the county site. The taxes on that house now are over $20,000 a year.
But I think the part that I keep trying to educate, Carl. By the way, we're going to get into these labor numbers in a second. But what I keep trying to educate, and I know it's people don't want to turn on the radio to feel like they're going to class, but you have to as an investor. I mean, if you put your money in a mattress, you may think you're not an investor. Yes, you are. You're just a bad one, right? I mean, you still are. You got money and you're doing something with it. By definition, you're an investor, right? I mean, but if you don't realize that 30% increase in your home, that your townhouse just went from worth $350 to $315 or $310, I think you need to take a 4-hour class. You need to know that. It's a dramatic. It's not just the tax bill. It has to do with the next person coming in saying, I can afford $5,000 a month, $4,000 in a mortgage, $1,000 on the taxes. Well, wait a minute. Taxes are $1,500. That means I can only afford $3,500 on the mortgage. That means I can't pay as much. I mean, it's as simple as the day is long if you're in that business like I am, but it isn't all that intuitive. I mean, for other people, I mean, if you ask me what's intuitive to a welder, I wouldn't have a clue, you know, type of thing. But anyway, Carl, my question, I'm shifting gears here. Paul Harvey, page 2.
Yep.
We had these massive numbers last Friday, and yet I went to the Carl Denninger Sigmi Antuit sheet, labor force statistics from the current population survey, which I'm guessing is the household survey, and I'm looking at the December numbers that claim there's 310,000 people went to work, plus another 20 or 40,000 from the month before, and lo and behold, I see this number up 142,000. Not 3-something. So, where am I wrong here, Rover?
Well, you're not wrong. There's a problem with the establishment survey because December is normally a firing month, okay? Because they start laying people off. January is normally a bigger firing month, by the way. The household survey firing numbers for last month were -534, okay, unadjusted. This is just raw data. The year before it was -578, and the year prior to that was -587. So, 534 is right about in line. So, I mean, you know, is it a little, you know, is there maybe 50 there? Yeah, sort of. But the not in labor force number went up substantially. That's a huge increase on a month by month basis. That was 335,000 people that just kind of walked off.
No. I'm looking from November to December. The not in labor force number went down. That's why the unemployment.
No, you're in the wrong table.
What the hell? This is the one you told me to look at.
You got to look in the household unadjusted table.
All right, another double secret table. I'm looking here. There's the people. Here's the numbers I've got. Okay, the number of the employed last month 156,803. Employed this month. I'm talking about November, December, 156,945. So the household survey.
No, you're in the wrong. You're in the wrong table.
What the hell is the official table?
the employed number for this month was 156.41, unadjusted.
All right, well, I'm looking at this. Must be an adjusted number I'm looking at.
Yep, it is.
All right, so this one has people not in the labor force going from 95.886 to 95.649.
Right, and the problem with that is that I don't use the adjusted numbers because I don't believe them. If I'm working off annual, Christmas is always at the same time every year, so therefore if I go December to December, I don't need the adjustments and I don't have to listen to the funny games out of BLS. I call them the Bureau of Lies and Scams for a reason.
Okay.
The unadjusted non-labor force number for last month, for December, 96,378. November was 96,043.
All right, so those are big difference. That's like a million people difference.
It's a huge difference, and the problem is you can play that game for a very long time, but if you use the unadjusted numbers and you look at annualized rate of change, because the whole reason to adjust them is supposedly for seasonality, right? Last year, in December, the non-labor force number was 96,230. This year, in December, is 96,378. One's bigger than the other, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, there you are. And then the other thing that I look at that I think is very important and probably the most important number of all is the population corrected figure, which is X the change in people in the workforce, working age people. What is the 12-month change in the employment rate? And the answer as of December, and this one bounces around a lot because you have good months and bad months, of course. But as of December, the 12-month rate of change is plus 100,000.
So two things here. Well, actually, there's a bunch of stuff now that you just brought it up. This was my double secret fallback, couldn't possibly be wrong table. Now you're telling me I'm looking at the wrong table.
No, you're just looking at the wrong part of it, if it's where I think you're getting it from.
I'm looking at this.
On the left side.
I'm looking at the A1. I'm looking at the A1 employment status. Does it surprise you that in the last year we've only had people in the workforce only up 1 million, and yet every other year before that is like at least a million and a half or two? Or is that because we didn't have any immigration this year or what?
I don't know. I mean, that's kind of a funny number. I mean, and here's the thing. January is the normalization month for that.
Okay,
so you have to be a little bit careful. What I've got here is from December is 256,109 last December for working age population.
I got 257,791.
Right? Well, and now I got 258,888 for last month.
That's right.
Are unadjusted.
Okay, that's the first number we've agreed upon. But the second question, because we only have a minute or two, what we're getting this, and you pointed it out, I'm going to say in August, I don't know if you remember saying this, the number of the net people not in labor force shifted by like 400,000 people in 1 month and kind of popped back. We're starting to get this, I'll use the term, volatility in that number. In the last couple of months, it's been like 200,000. Actually, it was 400,000 again September, October. Now it's 200. Is that something that can possibly be happening, that 300,000 people go flying back in the labor force 1 month and they come flying back out the next?
That number is normally quite volatile. It's not unusual. I mean, it doesn't happen all the time. It's not unusual for it to change by 750,000 or even 1 million people in a month.
Really?
The August number was especially notable because it was a plus 2 million, which is, I mean, that one makes you scratch your eyebrows and say, excuse me. But there is some justification for that. August is usually a big plus number, and the reason has to do with people coming in and going out, and there is a seasonality to it. Okay, the problem is you can't trust their seasonal adjustments. So again, I just look at the 12-month rate of change, because that's really where, you know, and that's the number that matters when you look at it. If you got to take those seasonality adjustments.
Well, I've got that on my list. I got the number almost the exact same as last year, 95,716 and 95,649.
Yeah. See, well, you're on the, you know, on the adjusted. I've, you know, from the unadjusted, I'm in 96,378, and last year was 96,230. So it's plus a little.
Yeah, but plus just a little.
Plus 150.
So it's not kind of growing like it was for a long period of time. Kyle, we're going to have you back, obviously, before the labor numbers come out, because when all this stuff settles down with the market, let's try and figure out where we are. And you're probably the one guy that I can talk to, and this debt out of China is starting to bother me. I don't know why it is, but maybe it's because I'm the only one who's reading it. But this dollar
should have been a long time. It should have been bothering you for a long time, but nobody seems to care.
Why is it that nobody seems, especially now that people are starting to, they're non-performing, and they still don't care? Is this something the Fed should be looking at, and 2 years from now it'll be a big problem, and they'll have missed it yet again?
Well, but the Fed doesn't have a whole lot they can do about it. I mean, this is mostly about fiscal trade and trade policy and the fact that we continue to run these huge deficits, and somebody's got to buy it, or else you'll have 11% interest rates.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, the companies that are loaning directly to the U.S., that have now the currency issue versus... going
right. Well, that's stupid. But you know what? People do dumb things in bull markets.
Well, I suppose that's the truth. But anyway, thank you very much. You have a good one. We'll have you back. I'm going to say a week or two, and enjoy Florida. S&P futures still up 20. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here,
right now, right here, right now, right now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howley, Mr. Brendan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber. I'm on the board. S&P futures up 18, Dow futures up 198, NASDAQ futures up 51. So we got another bullish day going here. Yesterday we kind of slid. We ended up maybe half as high as we were, maybe a third as high as we were on the top, but still we ended up positive, and it didn't look like we were going to fall on the close or anything. We just kind of slid. It's kind of hard to, as the day wears on, you get more and more news from both sides all over the damn place, and it tends to, if you're up, it wants to make it come down. If you're down, it wants to make it come up. DAX up 131, 1.2%, as Europe is cheering the fact that we're talking to China again here. I think that's got to be it, because the last thing they want is some huge blow up there. FTSE up 73, 1%. CAC round up 76, 1.6%. So all bullish. Renee's in Nikkei up 165, back over 20,000. 20,201.8%. Shanghai, not doing much. These guys were up yesterday a bunch, as you recall. They're down 6.2%. Hang Seng, up 39.1%. Again, they were up a bunch yesterday. Oil, up 66 cents. Brent up 76 cents. 49.18 and 58.09. So we're back up to almost $9. 890 is the, spread there. And we've got gold down, down $8 now. Which is not good. I'd like to see a little bit of a rally in gold. We're not going to get it today. Silver down 11 cents, although we're still talking 1281. We're under 1200, so we're still up a bunch from where we were. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi, Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still relatively quiet, or at least normal travel times across the area this morning. Better than yesterday with no rain in the forecast this morning. We do have a crash on Lakeshore Drive southbound just before Belmont Avenue on the north side. That's causing some delays. Hollywood to Monroe is now 47 minutes, so some stop traffic on Lakeshore Drive. Expect significant delays while they work to get that accident cleared. On the north side of the city, Devon Avenue westbound between Richmond and Sacramento is closed due to sewer work, so that's causing a slowdown on Devon on the north side. But the Eans and Kennedy looking normal at this time. Same with the Eisenhower and Stevenson. That earlier car fire at Harlem on 290 is all clear. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Only other crash in the area is in western suburban Carroll Stream. Gary Avenue at Army Trail Road, there is a crash causing delays. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, sorry, we got a phone call right when I was talking. Weather today, overcast skies with temperatures falling this afternoon, so we'll reach the low 40s, and then this afternoon temperatures will fall into the 30s and then into the teens tonight, and then we'll be cold with highs just in the 20s tomorrow. But we'll get up to 42 today before the temperatures fall. So even though it feels nice this morning, be sure to bundle up for your commute home. Right now it is mostly cloudy and 40 degrees, going up to 42, but temperatures falling. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 71. Right now it's clear and 42. In sports, national championship game last night from Santa Clara, California saw Clemson, the underdog, 5.5-point dog, absolutely blow out Alabama. 44-16 was the final, Clemson's second national championship in the last 3 years. Blackhawks were the only other team of note in action in this area anyway. They lost to the Flames 4-3. Chief.
So, two things from the Chicago area. One is, I can't believe this. This has to be a nightmare from 30 years ago. Sears to liquidate as Eddie Blanford's bid fails. How the hell could the most iconic American company damn near ever be going to liquidate?
It is amazing when you think about the ubiquitousness of Sears even 30 or 40 years ago to where it is now. Sears catalog when we were kids, to the fact that it's gone bankrupt and has to liquidate it. It's an amazing turnaround.
And Eddie Lambert, John Neal, how are you?
Well, good. Good morning. How are you guys?
All right. And Eddie Lambert was the absolute savior. I mean, they should replay all of Kramer's story about you have to buy Sears Kmart because Eddie Lambert, and how the guy's still on TV after telling people to do that. There was a buddy of his. This guy, could there have been a worse executive in the history of the world?
Well, a little bit of self-dealing there.
Just a little bit? So, Maddie, we have John, but don't take too long, but explain to the listeners our new definition of encroachment and what happened to us at our local bar last night.
Well, we've been getting some buzz on Twitter about this already because you teased it in the first hour. So we have to tell a quick story. So everyone knows the Tripoli Tap is the official watering hole of Stocks and Jocks, the little Lincoln Park Saloon. And Chief was there in his usual spot. Not that he's there all the time. We're not going to call him Norm Peterson or anything, but he's there sometimes. And I wandered in meeting a buddy there, and of course I see Chief. And I realized right away that the audio I'm hearing on the TVs is not for the national championship game, and it's not for the Celtics
game. Not even close.
And I realize our normal Monday spot, which is kind of empty usually and has like whatever sports game is on, is all of a sudden packed with two tables full of young, late 20s, early 30s girls, and they're watching The Bachelor. And The Bachelor TV show is taking over the bar, and the audio's on, and it's a 3-hour show that starts at 7, and the girls were there from 7 to 10, and the football game was an afterthought. It was
in the corner.
It was on the corner TVs with no audio. So, of course, we end up striking up conversations with the girls throughout the evening because Chief and I were watching the show, with them.
You could not.
You could not watch it because it was the TVs were right there and the audio was on. And it was pretty funny to hear the girls.
Oh God, it was hilarious!
Judging the outfits, judging the attitudes, the hair, you know, making fun of some girls, and of course some girls they liked. And it was it's an interesting show.
It is so, Brendan, you're sitting there minding your own business. Oh God, is that dress is gorgeous? I hate her.
Right. Yeah, you had one girl that was like, "Oh, I like her," and one girl, "Oh, I can't stand her." It's like, what? I mean, it was hilarious.
But evidently, they're they pretty much said we're here every Monday for the next 10 weeks, get to love it. You know, yeah. Like it or love it.
Yeah, and my basketball team has been going to Tripoli on Mondays for like 10 years now.
They've got your table.
And and the girls just came in, took our table, like, and no questions asked. And our season starts back up next week, so I'm going to have to tell the guys, like, hey, we're going to have to move to the tabletops or something because they took our table and they took the audio and they took over the TVs.
And there's no remorse.
Oh, no, not at all.
We're talking about serious encroachment.
Oh, yeah, and they even mentioned that there could be more of them, quote-unquote, next week.
Now, is that a positive or a threat?
I don't know.
Can you reserve your table?
Well, they obviously have. I mean, they're not backing down. Let's put it that way. It's now their bar on Monday night, and they're proud of it. Well, I did say that next week it's only a 2-hour show.
Yeah. So last night it's a 3-hour show. The season debut is 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Chicago time, and then after that they go down to 2-hour shows, and then the season finale is probably 3 hours as well. So it's a big thing, and the bar gave them some sort of special on glasses of wine. And in exchange, they have to come every week, and you know they'll put the show on.
And it is pretty funny, Brendan and John. It's, you know, but just talk about being tossed out of your. I mean, we're lucky we got the TV in the corner, for God's sake.
You're lucky you got to sit at the bar.
Well, yeah, they weren't bar people. They're doing the wings and all the other stuff. So they had all the.
Well, hopefully all the single guys are listening and writing down dates and times, you know. So.
Oh, that's exactly right. And, you know, most of the girls were engaged or married, it looked like. But I assume there was probably a few single girls in there. And, yeah, I mean.
How about you want to bet before the 10 weeks are up, Audrey and Jill are heading over there and we're sitting at the end of the bar trying not to be heard. It looks like this is going to grow. And but it is scary. The listen to their comments. I mean, it's then Maddie had all of a sudden he didn't know what we're not sure. He claims now he did this just to act dumb. He didn't know what a sequin was. And of course, every girl was happy to tell Maddie what a sequin was, you know, type of thing. So.
Oh yeah, they said they couldn't believe how many girls were wearing sequin dresses or whatever it's called. And yeah, that's the type of conversations that were happening.
I still like the one from Carolina that had the Miss Carolina thing. She never took it off. The speaking of which. To talk about
a show
announcement, I guess. I think Pete's been on. He might have been on once, but Jan's brother Pete, his daughter was just crowned Miss Nebraska.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Beautiful girl. I mean, she went out there, I think, on an athletic scholarship. She's like a track runner or something or other. Real nice. I mean, Pete's two kids are both really nice, and he's got a girl and a boy, and the girl's now Miss Nebraska. I knew she was doing some modeling, but. God, I mean, obviously it's a good thing, but.
You enter into the Miss USA pageant.
But don't you get like scholarships and stuff with it or something and everything?
I think she's already done with college.
Well, maybe, yeah, that's
so I don't think you get scholarships.
Well, can't she go back for a master's or something?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Or a doctorate?
If she hasn't already.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, so congratulations.
Yeah, you gotta think there's a cash prize to that women, you know. Whatever state you're from.
Yeah, you would think. I don't know. I mean, I've been talking about knowing nothing about nothing. I know nothing about beauty pageants, for God's sake. Anywho.
No.
So, John, what do you make of this rally day 4 or 5 or whatever it is here? And they're knocking our poor gold down a little bit, although it's still higher than it was.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm okay with the gold. That's put me aligned, actually, quite nicely. So, and I've been able to situate the, you know, different hedges I have nicely.
I put a double up to the upside a little on yesterday. It didn't cost me anything, but I did a kind of a bullish 1x2, and I'm kind of hoping it creeps up a little bit next week. But I guess the idea was right. I might have picked half a strike too high, at least as of today. But it's only Tuesday with a week and a half to go. A lot of stuff can happen, as they say, John, and especially in this marketplace.
Yeah, Well, somebody's just got to open their mouth, and you know, who knows. But yeah, I'm surprised, you know, the legs of this, to be honest with you. But we'll just keep doing what we're doing.
We're solving the entire.
That's all we can do.
We're solving the entire Chinese thing, and don't you realize, every agreement up till 2 years ago, till Donald decided to run for president, every single agreement that everybody's ever done has been horse bleep, and he's going to fix them all.
They're going to be the greatest agreements of all time.
Yeah, it's the greatest possible agreements of all time. And every guy who's ever worked on one for the last 40 years is an nincompoop, right?
Yep.
And
I like that word, by the way. That's a good word.
Yeah, that was over on Mother used to use. What are you, some kind of nincompoop? Would you say something stupid? I like the fact. I mean, even today, I would not have a problem putting somebody in our protected program. We're reaching a point where I might buy an extra put or two. Maybe if we get two more days of rallies, I'm going to say I might over put, shall we say. But last week I thought we were pretty fair, John. When we talked last Friday, we're saying, yeah, we'd probably just 1-to-1 the puts here. I probably would sell calls a little closer to where I bought it today than I did 2 days ago. And I just adjusted a little bit, but I don't have no money. I have no problem putting cash in. Which index would you pick? Because I actually think I might have some people with some reasonable cash this week that are they're joining up. Which is your favorite index right now?
I think if I had new money right now, I think I'd consider the S&P, to be honest with you, Tom.
Yeah, I would too, for like the first time in a while. I think David's pushing me a little bit towards the Russell, the IWM. I like the XLE down here too, still. I mean, but you know, I do something with, Dan's been having some luck, execution wise, which I was worried about for a while. He's got some people in the retail, S&P. He's got some people in the materials one, and David's got some people in the healthcare one, and they're all saying that when I'm talking about here, it's one thing to pick something that, you know, is going to go up and perform for you. It's quite another if you're trying to keep people hedged. You also need to have a place where you can execute your orders. And I've always been a little worried. I mean, I always stick with the biggies because, you know, if I want to do a spread, I can do it, you know, probably, you know, an offer or something like that. You know, Dan and David has been saying those other ones are kind of, that they've had some luck in there, John. So I might expand my horizon, shall we say, a little bit to, maybe the medical one, what's that, the XLV? Or is that the retail material one? Anyway.
I think it's the material one, but I agree with you, and I think over time, I think he's, he's got a lot more liquidity, meaning a lot more interest from people. And it's, you know, to our benefit. As you say, we can start expanding our horizons on these things, which is good, because we were interested in these sectors anyhow. So.
What's your feel on the... What I'm asking, John, is feel we're not trying to give you a trade or whatever, but we were concerned for a very long time. And Brendan, you were part of this discussion where the QQQ, which is essentially the NASDAQ 100, when back in 2000, just to give ancient history for those that aren't that old, it got to be where 45-50% of the index was five or six stocks, which pretty much makes it a kind of a horse bleep index in a lot of ways, or at least you better know that you're really buying those five stocks. And in those days, it was Cisco, Oracle, Microsoft. Was it Intel and Dell? I think it was that,
yeah,
something like that.
Dell was the other one.
And it had those stocks all basically got their butt kicked for, you know, two decades, and now all of a sudden the FANGs brought the QQQ. Kind of in the same spot where your Facebook, your Apple, your Amazon, those things became 46-48% again of the QQQ, sort of an ominous sign, right, Jen? But not a tradable sign. I mean, it's nothing you can say, oh God, when they get there, you need to sell them. It's not, you can't trade that way, but it just, you don't like it when an index gets that concentrated. And all of a sudden, we basically have gotten, I mean, Apple has gotten totally spanked, and Amazon, down, what, $500 or $600. I'm not so sure that, I wouldn't lob a penny or two into the QQQ here, Ken. I mean, as much as I have not wanted to do that in a few years, I'm, I might want to rethink that. But you've been more into the, because some of your people wanted the FANG exposure, where mine didn't necessarily. So you've been doing more of this. How do you feel about that? Would you consider it a QQQ, sir?
Yes, I would, or as some other ETFs I use, or even some of the individual stocks for some of these people that have quite a bit with me. But yeah, I've been thinking along those lines too. I don't know that I exactly pulled that trigger today, but yeah, I have been tossing that around, Tom, to get back into something like the like the Qs, just for that exposure.
Brandon, what would you? I mean, you're probably sitting there kind of stunned that five stocks out of 100 would be 48% of an index. What would your number be that would, I guess I'd be more comfortable under 40, John, although I don't know why, 41 versus 39 would make any kind of difference. I guess I'd be happier in the mid-30s, but it's got to be down a chunk with this Apple down $440 billion, for God's sake. I mean, it's... In our lifetime, have we ever seen a stock that take that kind of a valuation hit in a couple of months? I mean, good Lord.
Right.
Well, no, nothing's ever been that big. I mean, it was a trillion-dollar stock, and they lost, over 40% of it, right?
Well, that's where you have to start from, how big they were to begin with, and they were the first trillion-dollar company.
Yep. Well, with a few right near them.
True.
I'm just saying, I'm still not real happy, because this goes back to, the CBOE was looking for indexes, and we were going to put a automotive index together. And if you do a cap-weighted, I'm not going to go through, but briefly, cap-weighted means is you throw the stocks in there, and based on the company's market cap, the price times the amount of shares outstanding, you figure out what all the company's market caps are, add them all together, and if General Motors is, $8 billion, and the total value of the index is 100, well, then guess what? GM is 8% of the index. Well, if you put any kind of automotive index together, GM and Ford were going to end up being, 60% of the index. So we basically said, this isn't any kind of index. and we stopped, we said, to hell with this. So you have to be careful sometimes with these cap-weighted things that they're not that high. Obviously the Q has had that problem, or not a problem, depending on how you... I mean, obviously, the best thing in the world is if you put money in the Qs and in five stocks for 50% of it, and they all doubled. Guess what? You did pretty well in your investment, right? So, but the question is are they going to double when they're that big already? But I would say, I don't know where my thought would be, Jan, under 40, that all of a sudden I feel really good about it, or 41. I just feel better about it than when it was at 48. Is all I know.
I mean, I agree too. I mean, I don't know that I have an exact place.
What you were doing stuff in another index that was even more FANG happy. What was that index?
Yeah, it's the FDN, and basically that's for people that really wanted to have that FANG exposure. And it wasn't the hedgeable thing, so I very much was just trading it for folks, And as of right now, I haven't got back into it. Then that's your question.
You're totally out of there?
Yeah. Yeah, and we got out, some time ago, which, turned out to be, the right thing to do. I can't say, it was more than, hey, we took a good profit and left it at that. It wasn't anything scientific than that.
I mean, going forward, I mean, there are times, and we just came through a decade, really, that was sort of like that. You really wanted to be in the broad market because the whole broad market moved. I mean, pretty dramatically. It was really pretty hard to pick stocks and look at your hedge fund managers, look at your stock pickers, it was really hard to pick stocks that did better than the broad market. But then there's been, decades where that isn't true, where your broad market is up 2% a year, but if you stayed in, industrials, or you stayed in oil companies, or you stayed in something else, you could have made 5, 6, 7. I keep trying to drive this point home, but the last 10 years, doesn't mean we're not going to do the exact same thing in the next 10. We could very well. I'm just saying that there have been times when none of that stuff that worked the last 10 years worked. And yet,
Right.
I don't know, Brendan, if you had to say, because Brendan is a 401k kind of guy, would you, do you feel that just wing my money in the NASDAQ or the S&P that you're going to do as well as, or darn, I mean, you're never going to do as well as, you know, some biotech that starts at $5 and gets a cure for cancer and goes out at 2,000. I mean, there's no way you're going to, I mean, the broad market's ever going to do that, but those are really hard to find. I've never found one. Do you get the feeling that the whole market can move, or are you going to have to find spots that are moving better in the market?
No, I think the whole market will move.
Really?
Yeah.
Which way?
Well, I think it's going to move in both directions, but more up than down.
Really? Okay. I mean, is there, you know, much time? Do you, there's a lot of reasons why you could think that way. One, you could think that the world is just better, earnings are going to be up, or you could say that the concentration means that the S&P 500 will do dramatically, maybe at the pain of the Russell, or at the pain of the small caps, because any decent small cap is going to be bought by one of the top. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to think that. I mean, are you just generally bullish on the world, or do you think you want to stay in the bigger stocks?
In bigger stocks and more diversification in that way.
Okay. Well, S&P futures, where are we here in the S&P futures? I will look. The, you got a futures quote there, Jan? S&P futures still up 19. Looks like a bullish day. Jan, thank you. Brennan, thank you. Maddie Weber, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.